You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. Welcome to the show. This podcast is about creativity, the professional aspects of creativity. Well, you could also say it's about creative thinking. You see, a career in a creative profession typically means carving your own path and making a lot of important decisions alone. And when competition is fierce and the market's uncertain, getting firsthand insight can really help. Join me as I interview full-time creative professionals and ask them to reflect on these really important moments in their career. Each episode, my guests open up about significant and sometimes even subtle choices that have led to their success. I know it can feel lonely out there, so I hope you find their stories as inspiring as I do. That's the sound of a very rainy day in Australia. This episode was recorded in Sydney. It actually rained for about 4 days straight, and any fantasies I had about an Australian summer were quickly drenched with reality. But it was warm, so I delightfully walked to meet with Lara Pike and Anne-Louise Daddick. Together, they are Province, a creative collective and design studio. They graciously accepted my invitation to be guests, not knowing that they've also accepted the challenge of sharing a mic between the two of them. These are really talented artists, and I was really impressed with the passion and honesty they gave to the entire interview. I hope you enjoy. Thanks so much for having me here, guys. I really like your studio space. It is a part of a larger collective, yes?
Yep. So we are, we're called Province, but we're in the Creative Spaces building, which is basically, I guess, subsidized by City of Sydney. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of like new and emerging practices that moved in about 3 years ago. So I guess now we're less new, but yeah, everyone's kind of been building up what they do, and this is our fourth year now, so in this building, so mm-hmm. we're lucky.
Yeah. I wonder culturally how that must feel when the government steps in and actually helps and aids artists, because I think that might have an impact on how you feel about yourself, knowing that your government or your community or your council is trying to make it happen, trying to make it a little bit easier. That's got to feel good.
Yeah, well, I think rent in Sydney has been crazy expensive. Yeah, and so if you're an emerging creative, you physically cannot afford to pay rent on a studio space. And I think the council kind of recognised that and thought we need to give these guys an opportunity to kind of forge their practice. Otherwise, I don't think it would be possible.
Yeah, and that's, I think the last sort of 5 years has been a really big growth in that practice happening, because traditionally, I think Sydney was never really looked at as the creative city and the cultural city. It was always Melbourne, and I think there's a real rallying against that. That, you know, yeah, it's really expensive to live here and it's fairly inaccessible sometimes, but we can actually still make things happen, and for the council to actually get on board. Like, I think it took them like 10 years to make it happen, but it does make a difference, and you actually see people's business grow. Like, mm-hmm. it's very cheesy, but you see from year one to now where people are, and it is pretty huge. So yeah, it does make a difference having that actually accessible.
Because some people, artists, talk about that transition of when things are growing in their business, that they're able to have a workspace that's not home. Typically, artists start from their own flat or their own apartment. Yeah. And so that's really cool. And then in addition to have the camaraderie, I mean, do you guys get along with the other tenants and stuff? And
I mean, like, to be honest, we don't know everyone as well as some people. So we have like really great neighbors. They've moved out, they're downstairs, and then we have directly below us a really beautiful collective, and we kind of just by the nature of it end up aligning ourselves with other makers, and that's just kind of because you end up moving in same circles. So we have a ceramic studio below us, and then we had textile designers next door to us, and then there's some really great spaces, and they're in different worlds a little bit, so there's a bit more like, hey, in the hallway, but we don't really, I guess, go as deep, but it is nice, and the galleries downstairs and the shops as well.
I think that Sydney is
quite competitive, and I think that there is a stronger art community maybe than you guys give yourselves credit for, because there's a lot of creative things happening. Luckily for me, I'm having this fantastic time,
yeah.
You know, not only finding the talent, you know, but it being talent worth talking to and putting on the show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sydney has a lot to offer.
I think there's lots of great stuff happening in Sydney, and there's a really tight community of artists and creatives and kind of more multidisciplinary creative people working. I'm so glad we're kind of now on the inside of it. I feel like it's quite insular and it's quite kind of closed. Yeah. So
how long have you been in Sydney, do you mind?
Yeah, so I came here for uni in 2002, mm-hmm. And I grew up in the country. And I moved to Sydney because there's not much happening in the country. And I didn't feel like I was around my tribe then. And there's no art, there's no schools, there's no making, there's no culture of that kind of stuff. So definitely I've kind of never really been back since I moved here, and now it's kind of become my home.
How long did it take to feel like home? I think breaking into a big city is a challenge for a lot of people, and it's nice to know how long it takes. I think it reminds people that it's okay and take your time. How long did it take for you?
Totally. Well, I came here for uni, and thankfully I went to COFRA, and COFRA is a very kind of small art school, and so automatically you kind of get embraced into this family, and for me it was really nice because I was like, oh, finally I'm meeting people who are kind of the same as me. And you know, when you go to school with people and they're all accountants or pharmacists or whatever they're gonna be, going to a like art school where you're like, you're all me,
yes.
You know, and that was really
the same freak flag is being waved.
Yeah.
We're all going to be unemployed.
And for you, Al, you're from Sydney?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up here, but I grew up, you know, on the other side of the bridge, like really residential, went to school, you know, in Hornsby. And it's, when you grow up there, like, we come into the city a lot, but it was literally like coming into the city, and it's the same city, but it's really another world because it's really quiet and really chilled. And you know, the same thing, there's not especially when you're growing up, culturally everything happens in the city, you know, so like all the galleries and all the like performance, everything, and it, you know, so even for me, I think going to uni was very much that opening up of like, oh, this is how the city functions, and this is actually what exists in it, which is exciting because you have little snippets of that, but you know, at high school you're just kind of chugging along trying to get it done without causing too much shit, I think. And you always, I guess, no matter what school you go to, most likely in high school you just, most likely I was anyway, just trying to get through it, you know. It doesn't mean it's bad, doesn't mean it's good, you're just like, sweet,
waiting for it to be over,
yeah, and just get through. And even that, you can have great people around you, but it's like you're still in a weird institution that
you didn't really choose.
And most likely, because there's not that many out there, well, I certainly didn't really attend them, academic, I guess, excellence is always preferred over like artistic kind of work. And that was sort of my experience, which it was really nice. And you get to art school and you're like, all right.
I think you make a great point about choosing. I never thought of it that way, that it's the first time you're making a decision that suits you.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably maybe one of the reasons why you guys call it uni, but college is just so fulfilling, typically as fulfilling, because you're heading down a path that suits you.
Yeah, and that thing I think that Laura was saying, that just being surrounded by the majority of like-minded people isn't incredibly, it's just really comfortable.
Yes.
And it's like a really nice thing to turn up to, and you want to be there. And
also
that thing of, everyone wants to be there. I mean, it's weird, like I think in first year you have a lot of people drop out because they don't want to be there.
Yeah.
But then as the degree progresses, you know, and whatever that degree is, like it can also not be the most amazing, but by the end of it you're there because you want to get something out of it, and you find that thing and you find your people and you kind of make shit happen. So COFRA was really great for that, I think, because it was little,
and all of our friends still, and a lot of the people that we still work with, and Al and I met at COFRA, you know, it's kind of been really paramount to
weirdly. I mean, it's weird because I only met Laura in my last year there, so I was in a different year, and but it was great. Like, so I did a year in Berlin, and that was incredible because it's a fucking amazing city, and it's, you know, just a very strong contrast. But it was actually great to come back to Sydney and be like, all right, like, let's fucking do this.
Like a new appreciation for what's always been here.
If you want it, if you want things to happen, you've got to do it. Yeah. Whereas I think in a city like Berlin, things are just happening and it's exciting and it's dynamic and there's just like this whole like movement also of like pushing forward, even in a weird, relaxed way. And history, and it's, you know, it's got a really tumultuous past. And I guess in Sydney, like, you don't have that like history, I guess, of like creative practice always bubbling away. But I do think like the last chapter is really, there's a lot changing and there's lots of great people doing really interesting stuff.
Well, the fun thing about this episode is that I'm interviewing two people at once, which is really cool. And you guys have a really strong work relationship. And I think that I think it's a dynamic worth exploring about what to look for in a partner, what makes a good partnership, you know, how soon into getting to know each other that you knew that you had this vibe and this ability to work together.
Well, Al and I worked together doing artist-run gallery space, and I think we knew each other from uni, but we did it with a few other people as well, and during that time working together, we were kind of like, both had a very similar kind of approach to like, what we want to be doing doesn't exist at the moment, so we've got to make it. Yeah. And we didn't want to kind of just go out and get a job and, you know, do that, so took the plunge in there. And it definitely feels like a married life, you know, like we spend a lot of time together and we really work hard at our kind of working relationship and friendship, because we're also, you know, and that's a kind of, it's quite big, like we're very similar, but we're also, our approach to creating work is quite different, which I think is a real asset, but also something that we
have to battle through it to get to the good place as well. So, but yeah, I mean, even though you said like that we didn't want to go get a job, I think the thing is like we had many jobs where we were like, this isn't quite it. And we'd both worked at a larger institution, we'd freelance, we were teaching, and then we ended up running the gallery together with, like, there was a group of seven of us, and it was, you know, like having a coffee and being like, yeah, we're doing all this stuff, but it's not the thing. And we kind of joked, oh, we should just start doing it. And then that was that moment where we're like, all right, let's do it. So that became a gradual build up where we sort of started you know, part-time and really building it up, because I mean, unfortunately money does come into it, that you can't just launch yourself into something, you know, because you need clients and people to work for. So that was a process, but yeah, so then we're 4 years in. Beautiful journey.
So where do you guys sit in the scape of a digital era when you guys are producing a lot of tactile, fine art, kind of crafty elements? Like, maybe that as making it easier because you're so unique, or it's challenging. What is it for you?
Well, it's weirdly both, because we do both. That's the thing. So I think our love projects are probably, well, for me, they're less digital, but... We do a lot of traditional web work. We do graphics that often end up being like used in a digital sense. But I guess what I find interesting is that we can also combine a really analog approach. So we do a lot of, you know, hand-drawn material that then might get translated on the computer. But the nice thing is that we have different skill sets as well. So like I'm pretty much the technological Luddite and Laura's capable, and we use that, I guess, to our advantage. And in the same way that software programs, like, we have different skills and abilities, and that's a really beautiful combination that we literally pass work back and forth. So it means that we can still exist in this, you know, digital world, but I guess our love is
making,
and like, how do you use the digital world to enhance those projects? So like, we're not anti-digital and we're not pretending that we can, you know, escape it. It's more like, how can you use it in an interesting way, and how can it be engaging, and how can it be accessible and add strength to a project?
That's cool. You know, I was just in the Gallery of New South Wales, and I took a moment to go down to the lower floor into the Indigenous works. And I mean, I don't know a ton of history, but I was really taken by the natural elements. So, you know, the description of the piece is on bark, paint on bark, and I'm assuming in the bush or country that these are coming from, and the patterns and the colors. And I thought, this must be, I sort of got it, and it felt like this is an Australian thing that you guys even like your sweater, you've got this great geometric sweater on, and you know, and the wall has this great geometric patterns. Even the jacket behind you, you know,
yep.
And it's like, oh, this is just normal. I'm assumed maybe this is just normal for an Australian
to
think in this way and think in this colors, because I love that you guys seem to have a strong relationship with color.
Yeah, definitely a strong relationship with color and patterning. But I mean, it's a really tricky one because obviously Indigenous art and, you know, particularly Aboriginal works, they have such a huge amount of storytelling and ancestry and like language embedded in their artwork. And so that is, it's incredibly inspiring, and it's also amazing to see that it's now really acknowledged as a really high level creative output, because that I think is something that has sort of taken a while as well, and there's a lot I think of bad practice that still goes on in terms of,
and I think Australia has quite you know, a supportive culture of colour, which is so exciting to us. You know, we go to Melbourne, maybe Sydney even more so than Melbourne, and Sydney was really kind of celebrating lightness and sun and sky and beach and like Ken Doan, you know, all of these kind of iconic Australian artists who are kind of playing with colour in a different way to Indigenous artists. And I don't think that we can really claim that much kind of, you know.
Well, I can see now that what I said seemed a little politically loaded, and, you know, I'm totally an outsider, so I wasn't intending
also,
to sort of, like, make that alignment.
Sidestep the, you know, because it's...
For sure, for sure.
It's just, it's a really... That's such a loaded practice with so much history. But
I saw it more on the, like, just the outside bubble, like, isn't this lovely? I'm drawing a connection.
Absolutely. Totally.
And and in that respect, like, patterning as a language... 100%.
Yes, that's a great
way
of putting it.
And that's what
I feel like you guys seem to speak. There's like a tone, a hum, and it seems to be these brilliant patterns.
Yeah, and we are really interested in pushing it past just being a surface decoration.
Right.
So with our work, a lot of it is abstracting ideas, you know, into patterning or into colour and shape, but there are stories embedded in that. So totally, there's a parallel. So yeah, we're not trying to be like, what? I think just it's loaded. But... yeah, that's something that we're really interested in, that it's not just aesthetic surface decoration.
Mm.
And sometimes it is, and sometimes a project calls for that, but that it isn't just about decorative finishings, that it can be embedded conceptually.
Story.
Yeah. How do you accomplish that? I'd love to know a little bit more about your process.
Mm.
I think everyone, the output is, you know, great, and then people tend to wonder how was that accomplished.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we've got a kind of consistent style, but every project is very different, and I think that that's because we really work with time and place and the kind of the feeling of that moment. And a lot of our favorite projects, which are more kind of community-based projects, it's actually about talking to people and working with people in communities that we're not usually working in. And so
it's great just to get out of the studio.
Totally it's great. And then being able to kind of respond to those conversations or to that place.
Well, in terms of process, when did you guys know that you had it, that style, that language, that thing between the two of you that was a bit set apart, and it was, and I, you know, I'm not sure everyone's ready to, like, pat themselves on the back, but when you knew it was good enough to be a thing, do you know what I mean? I know it's hard sometimes for people to step up and say, I'm really good at this.
Yeah.
But when did you know that you had sort of hit something?
I think one of our early projects, we kind of got thrown in the deep end. We did a large-scale mural, and it was really both of us coming at it from both our different styles, working on a design together, pitching it, and we were pitching against really sort of traditional realistic imagery and then just like graffiti works. And so we were this weird in-between rogue choice, and even at the meeting with the clients, they were like, I don't know, this is crazy, like, you've taken a really clear message that we want to give and you've abstracted it. And our you know, the whole idea behind it was, we're not trying to treat people like it has to be surface value, like, they can think about it or they can engage with it because they're drawn in by color and shape and then investigate what it's about. So I guess that project was one of our early ones, and that was a really nice example of, all right, this approach can actually work. It's very much the output of two different minds, as well as, like, I guess even the fact that, like, you know, we design it, we have to go through the whole process of, like, meeting with clients, and then we, like, physically paint it. And that was a really nice end result that I think, you know, we could see, okay, this works, and that this could lead to, you know, bigger and better things.
So you guys are multidisciplinarian.
Yeah.
Can I assume, I just made an assumption when I was looking at your catalog of stuff, that you're also really good at multitasking when working. Do you know what I mean? If you've got this much juggling around in your brain, I just sort of assume that you guys, maybe that's how your work style is. It's just a bit of like in the air.
It's so great that we have a partnership, especially in those kind of situations, because one of us can be doing something and the other can, you know, be on our phones writing emails. And I think having both of us on jobs means that we can kind of juggle all of this stuff, which is so much easier. I mean, I just don't think it would be possible otherwise.
Yeah, and it also, I don't know, it allows you to, it's a weird thing because you kind of get better at what you're good at and then, you know, potentially you don't do the things you're not as good at. And in a way that could be seen as detrimental, but for us it's really great because you get to actually really strengthen those things that come naturally to you and that's intuitive, and also the things that you enjoy. So we kind of build up those areas individually.
And it's a nice balance, you know. So we're in the studio some days only on our computer working, typing, doing kind of theoretically boring stuff. And then, you know, the next day we're outside, out of the studio. And so it kind of keeps a really nice rhythm to things not getting stale, and to those kind of different jobs feeding each other in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So people tend to have really obvious sources of influence or inspiration. I was just curious if you guys had maybe like a non-typical, like, you know, like going to the grocery store really inspire. I don't know. Like, do you guys have any sort of non-typical?
We do go to the grocery store a lot.
But is it inspiring?
Sometimes. Usually when we're hungover, we're like, let's get every beverage in the world. I think, like, weirdly...
Because you abstract a lot, so I was wondering if there was a thing that isn't seen that's an influence.
Yeah, well, I think we're both really fascinated with history and time gone by and the idea of also, you know, that, everything is greater than us, so these, like, little snippets of, you know, the universe and everything connecting is kind of weirdly embedded in everything that we do, even in a very, very quiet way.
In a way, we're kind of really excited or inspired or in awe of the vastness of space and, you know, the sky or constellations in the sky or the ocean. And that sounds kind of very abstract and not completely directed, but I think kind of always thinking about our place within that or people's place within that has kind of been something. Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a question, speaking of place, good segue, your place within the market. So where's your place in the market as you're growing and you're getting bigger and you're juggling passion versus profit? Like, where are you guys sitting with that and juggling that?
That's our biggest kind of battle and our biggest kind of constant negotiation that we're working with. And for us, we really want to be doing love projects all the time, you know, and all of the favorite projects we do have no budget because it's for community organizations or for like not-for-profits, and they're the ones we believe in. And unfortunately, it doesn't pay the bills.
The bills or anything else.
So, you know, that's something that is just an ongoing thing, and we're getting better at it. I mean, I think we've just accepted the reality that you have to work in a commercial context if you want to be do this as a full-time profession.
Yeah, and just, I guess, working out what does that mean. Like, so what are those commercial jobs that we take on, and can you still, you know, do commercial work and
still sleep at night?
Still sleep at night, yeah. And like, you know, you can take on commercial jobs that still have integrity and you do a good job, and you know, they might be slightly less fulfilling, but I guess we are still working in that respect where we really haven't ever taken on anything that we violently disagree with, and I don't think we probably ever would, but I mean, you never know. But we really, like, even the small commercial jobs we take on, we still really believe in them.
They're all kind of nice people,
often small business, you know, and so that we can still feel really good about all that work, even if it's something that we're less passionate about. We still, you know, can do a great job and have happy clients, and that all feeds together, you know, into running a business.
Do you guys have like a compass, like a conceptual compass that is like verbalized between the two of you as to what gets you through when you start to feel maybe you're on a path that's leading towards your compromise, you know, that sort of branding compromise or personal integrity compromise? Is there like a thing, or do you just have like a way of just knowing, like looking at each other and going, time to talk?
Yeah, I mean, I think Al and I both have pretty strong politics around, like, our creative practice and not wanting to do anything that we don't really believe in, because otherwise I think that, like, it just doesn't feel good for us.
Yeah.
And
then you can't be a righteous asshole.
Yeah, as I say, because, you know? Does righteousness pay the bills?
Not yet.
Yeah, no, and it doesn't.
So what do you do to get past... Okay, so what you're describing is a real dilemma. So you're... that I appreciate and respect. You're saying that you want to do stuff that means something to you, that matters.
Yep.
So, but you don't want to go too far for the money. So how do you get past it? Because you guys are, you've been at this full time for a while.
Yeah.
Do you just have to drum up enough business and constantly keep working to keep those smaller and non-paying, like little paying jobs to keep,
yeah.
Is that the strategy?
Yeah.
How do you make it work?
Pretty much. And like, there's a lot of work that we do, a lot of commercial work that we do that we don't put on our website. And that's because we don't want that to be part of our branding and
right.
part of our body of work. But we also are totally open about the fact that we have to do those jobs and that those jobs kind of allow us to do other jobs. You know, I think that we're both kind of fine with doing that.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, what you guys are talking about is a totally normal thing. I don't mean to like isolate it, but like... What the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah, yeah. I know.
But I just wanted to hear what people think while they're doing it, because I think it helps other
people.
It's
one of those weird things where we find it weird because it's more about how we place ourselves and what we brand ourselves as, and that's confusing for most people because we sit in between worlds. But the design jobs we do, they're for great people, and we do a good job, so it's nothing to be like weird about, but it's not necessarily the direction we're pushing for, and that's why there's a...
And all those jobs thankfully have come through word of mouth, so we don't kind of go and drum up that kind of business. But if we do a visual identity branding website for a small business owner, thankfully it's kind of led to more of those things, and that's how it's kind of worked, and it kind of self-sustains in that way, and we definitely could push it more and make more money, I think.
But it's nice, the word of mouth is great because it means you have good people passing it on to good people, and so we've always worked with really nice people, and that's like,
it's
you know,
help.
It helps because it's one of those things where I think...
And we've worked for some dicks as well.
Oh, what are you talking about? I haven't. I'm the good one.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a balance, you know, it's always juggling, but generally we've had a lot of luck with, really nice people. But that's the thing, the direction I guess we want to frame our work in is much more that in-between world that we work on... artistic projects, but we come at it from a design sense, so we're problem solving and we're trying to look at, you know, how you can engage the community and how you can, do artistic work with integrity that still has solutions and, I guess, sustainable outcomes. So that's this weird direction we're trying to forge whilst still doing traditional design jobs and then doing unpaid artistic projects. So it's kind of like a weird little floating spectrum where it all works, but...
It takes time.
It takes time, and it's definitely a terrible idea if you want to make money, like a truly
people sometimes don't really know what to do with us, you know? So they don't want to hire us as designers because we're too kind of arty, and people don't want to hire us as artists because potentially we're too designy. So it's kind of finding a place in there that people feel comfortable with knowing who you are and what you do and what you can give to them. And, you know, clients are terrified because they're spending money and they want to know. They want to know what it's going to be like, and I guess...
And I think branding is really temperamental. I think it's something you always sort of have to work on because, you know, people, the outside market is funny. You never really know how you're being seen.
Mm. Yeah.
So you have to constantly try to, troll that or try to edit it as much as possible to simplify it.
And it is, you know, challenging because we're not by nature great at talking about what we do or ourselves either. So that, you know, has to, I don't know, weirdly get... sorted out somehow that we can at least clarify what that in-between space is, which I think we're getting better at, because before we were kind of like, we do a bit of everything. Whereas now we're like, well, we do this and we do this so that we can do this one thing that we're really trying to push forward in.
So what is something right now that you guys are working on that people can check out and excited about?
We just finished a mural for Sydney Festival, which literally got demolished, I think, yesterday.
From the rain?
Well, it was a temporary thing. So it was for the festival, so it was in that space. But we did a little collab with the artist in residence, Mesa, who was out working on the huge installation. So that was a really fun project. But then we've kind of moved into a really weird, busy schedule where we've got quite a lot of projects on the horizon that are coming up very quickly.
Yeah, so I think we've got a project in June called Little Baghdad, which is a kind of performance festival installation at a theatre company in Western Sydney, and it's about kind of celebrating Iraqi culture in Australia because we have a lot of kind of refugees, Iraqi refugees, and newly arrived Australians and stuff like that. So creating a space and a celebration of the kind of cultural diversity that's there. And so that's a really exciting project for us.
Yeah, and it's been like a year, over a year and a half in the making, so it's kind of building up, and that will be a bit of the culmination. But other than that, there's a few of the artistic unpaid ones on the horizon, but they're exciting, which is great, and one of them's in country New South Wales, which will be really exciting. Again, that's a sort of a love one. But on the other side of things, like, we've also just done a really, like, it was a really exciting job, even though, again, limited budgets because we're working with the arts, but we just did branding overhaul for Ensemble Offspring, which is a experimental and, I guess, contemporary classical music group. And it was really nice because we got to actually, like, work with the photographer, and it was, again, challenging because you're working with their existing branding material and trying to merge worlds and do this in between, but to work on that, push through with their graphics, and then now we're kind of going to help them, I guess, release their marketing stuff into the world. It was a really nice little segue that we're working on this strong graphics project whilst we were, like, you know, the next day painting, you know, murals. And we've got a couple of workshops at the MCA with kids coming up, which is really nice because that's something that we really want to start, I think, focusing on, like, how you engage with kids in a sort of non-traditional, you know, education sense where you're just like, I'm the teacher and you're here to learn, but, like, how do you actually bring this design approach into a making workshop as well?
I'm glad I gave you guys that much time to plug your work. I think that's the longest one. I sat there.
We're
you
like,
guys are
more
busy,
about me.
Busy ladies. I mean, but that's, you're doing it. I mean, that's how you're staying afloat. You're making this happen. That's what it requires. I think that's what the show is about, is shedding insight on the reality of this lifestyle. You know, there are some sunny, gorgeous days where you feel like yourself.
It's definitely hard.
And then there's other days where you're like, if I didn't love this, I wouldn't be here now.
Yeah.
So it's great. You guys have so much coming up. I mean, I think that is sometimes some people's form of success, so to speak, is when they get to a point where, you know, you can turn away work or the work is coming in. It's such a nice flow that you're not sitting around looking at each other going, holy shit, we better drum up some work quick.
Yeah, totally.
That's really cool.
Totally.
Well, I really appreciate you guys with this busy schedule. You just told me about sitting here with me. I feel even more grateful that you had me.
Pretty busy. Yeah. No, not at all. It's a real pleasure to have you.
I really appreciate it. Well, thanks for having me.
No, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to show your support through comments and reviews.